Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for listening. We are going to have a wonderful conversation this evening with my wonderful special guest, Larry Pellegrini. However, before I introduce him and talk about how I know him and what he's doing these days, I want to do a little housekeeping. So I want to remind you that you are listening to blogtalkradio.com/S as in Steve, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, the number 2. That will get you, if you ever want to click on that. What happens is that you'll see about 25, 26 episodes that we've been doing since March, having a great time laughing and joking, talking about the arts. Then if you want to call in or just listen, you can dial 1-516-453-6063. If you want to say something, ask a question, make a comment, then you press the 1 on your phone or on whichever dialing that you have. So it's just that simple, and I thank you so much for all these weeks. You're just calling in and listening to it because we've had so much fun thus far here on Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Now to my guest, Larry Pellegrini. Well, I can tell you that there are a few people that I knew at the very beginning of my career, and you've heard from some of them. You've heard from Andy Salvo, and you've heard from Ken Page. I'm going to highlight and talk to Alvin Alexis if I can find him and convince him to come on the radio. He was my first leading man in street theater, the theater for the New City. And Larry Pellegrini came into my life a little bit after my Broadway life started. And he has gone on to become the creator, director, and producer of the very popular, the longest off-Broadway interactive play, award-winning play, Tony and Tina's Wedding. But that's not the only thing that he does. He's an entrepreneur. He also wrote a play, one of the plays that he wrote, called String Bean. It was the life of Ethel Waters, and he wrote it back many years ago for me, and we've never done it, and we're going to talk about that play tonight. But my friend, Larry Pellegrini, is here with us tonight with all the other things that he's done, and we're going to talk about from the very beginning to where he is now, and I'm going to say, hello, Larry Pellegrini.
Hello, Lenny Godfrey. How are you today?
I'm really wonderful and so glad that you're here. We, you know, it's so wonderful to have people that I know, but maybe we've had gaps in seeing each other for a while and then we've come back together again. It's been a very interesting life and career for both of us. And so it's really wonderful to talk to you this evening. I look forward to it. I've been grinning all day long. So I tell you, it's been great. Now, you're welcome. So, Larry, I want to start from the very beginning because I think that there's so many different aspects of your life that were really affected by the arts, why you are in this business and in another business and how the arts affects what you do in your other businesses also. And I think it's important for people to know that because one of the things that I talk about all the time is that this program is to highlight how important the arts are in the influence of our society. and how so many people, not just those of us who make a living in the arts per se, but people who started off by being influenced by the arts, studying the arts, how they really have been able to bring the arts into their lives and into the avocation that they have. So let's first start with you. Tell us where you are from and talk about your parents and the influence of the arts on you at that point.
Yeah, thank you, Lenny. I was born in a little town in Illinois called Marseilles, like the French Marseille, and a little town of 4,000 people. And there was a movie theater there, but there wasn't really any theater there. But for some reason, as a very young person, I began to write plays. And in fourth grade, I wrote a play called The Winkies Go to Hawaii. And it was about, you know, it was a crazy piece when I look at it today, because it was about two people who went on vacation and they got put into a pot of boiling water. And, you know, I lived many years later in Hawaii, and I never saw that happen, by the way. And so I have been writing plays for a long time. And my parents were happy that I was doing this, but there was no connection with them, except that, of course, they're Italian and Irish and loud and storytelling and, you know, all of the fun things that happen in a family like that, which I think made me have an imagination. And having an imagination for me translated into writing plays. And then performing in high school and then going to school at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois. I went there for 2 years. I went to school in London for one summer. And then I came home and I said to my parents, I'm moving to Los Angeles. And they said, why? And I said, well, I don't want to be a teacher, which now I wish I had done that, but I said, I want to go and begin my life. I want to go be creative. So, well, you know, bless them. They let me.
But why Los Angeles? Why not New York immediately? Why Los Angeles?
Los Angeles, I think, was because, we're very much children of television. And and also, you know, Lucille Ball lived there and I loved her and I wanted to go and see her house. You know, I had these fantasies. I mean, nothing at that time, I don't think anything at that time was based in any kind of reality. I was very naive and it sounded like that's what I should do. A college professor of mine said to us at the end of our sophomore year, if you haven't made this business by now, if you have not made it, you're never going to make it because you're too late. So so I just said, okay, well, then I'm going to go and I'm going to go do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out to Los Angeles and I got a job selling shoes at Sears. And then I began to write plays out there.
Where did you live when you were in L.A.? Where did you live?
Well, at that time, I think I was there the first time for about 3 years, and I think I lived in about 10 places. So, I lived right by the Sears. Yeah, right by the Sears. I lived in Silver Lake. I lived in Venice Beach. You know, it was just, you know, I met up with some college friends, and I lived near Highland Park. So I lived all over there and made really good friends at that time.
Oh, it's one, you know, I love Los Angeles. I mean, I was there. I really do.
Yeah.
But I'm a New York born and raised girl. So, you know, I have that dichotomy for both of them. But now when you were in L.A., you were writing plays. How did that work in a town where really plays are not the center of attention? Were there any theaters, particular theaters there that you worked at? That I know most of the stars are not there anymore. Where did you work? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. I worked at a little theater called the Las Palmas Theater, which I still, I think is still there. It's in Hollywood on Las Palmas Boulevard. And I met a woman there. Her name was Edith O'Hara. And Edith, who passed away this year at 100 years old, she had a theater in New York, and she had one there, and she had brought a show there called Boy Meets Boy to Los Angeles. And it was running at the Actors Playhouse as well. So after I was in Los Angeles for 3 years, she said to me, "Do you? I'm going back to New York. I have a theater there. There's a carriage house in back. And you can come live there if you want. And you can, I'll, you know, you can have a job in the theater."
And, oh, my God. Yes.
I said, "Okay, when?" And she said, "Well, probably... probably in about 4 weeks." So, you know, at that time, I mean, I had my clothes and my car and a cat. So, you know, I did have to give the cat to somebody. I remember that cat. But and, you know, I took off and I drove across country and I arrived in New York and was able to live on 13th Street at this place called the 13th Street Theater, which still exists today.
Yes, it does.
And
yes,
and we lived in myself and another person named David Rappaport, who was also a writer. But we were living in the carriage house in back of the theater, which was very old. And in fact, one of the first things that Edith showed us there was that in behind this, the little stage there. She said, "Come on, I want to show you this." And she lifted up what looked to me like a trap door. And she said, "I've been told by many people since I've been here that this was part of the Underground Railroad."
That's what I heard, yes, about the 13th Street Theater. Yes,
yeah.
That it was part of the Underground Railroad. Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I crawled down in that space. And, you know, it was a fascinating place because it all felt historic to me. And, you know, this is 1977, so... you know, Broadway was alive with wonderful things. The first play I saw there was Runaways by Elizabeth Swados. And one of the very first people I met there was a man named Albert Poland, who said to me, "Oh, you have to read this book I wrote called The Off-Off Broadway Book." So I began to, you know, investigate Off-Off Broadway and the creativity that existed at that point. And Edith was terrific because she would say to me one day, she said, "You know, my friend's doing a show over at La Mama. Would you like to go?" This was at the end of our day there at the theater. And I said, "Yes." So she took me over, and it was the International Stud, which was the first part of Torch Song Trilogy.
Whoa.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and so it was one of the first performances. And afterwards, she introduced me to Ellen Stewart, and then she introduced me to Harvey Firestone, who, you know, I didn't know, not that these people were not anything to me at that point, but they became the fuel for my creativity, seeing all these kernels of just brilliance there. And so we produced a play of mine there that ran for a year called The Littlest Wild West Fighter. It was a children's theater show. And I remember that.
Where was it? Where was it?
It was at the 13th
Street.
Theater.
Yes. Okay. Because I didn't know if it was La Mama or the 13th Street. Okay.
Yeah. Oh no. So this was still at 13th Street Theater. So we, you know, did a show called The Littlest Wild West Fighter, and it was kind of like a Wizard of Oz, but you know, in the Wild West. And but the person that we cast in the play as the young girl was a young girl named Amy Stiller, who was Ann Mirren and Jerry Stiller's daughter, and she was fantastic in the show. But you know, they came down to film her. I saw my first video camera at that point, and you know, and then little by little, I began to understand that all around me, wherever I was, there were all these fantastic creative people. And, you know, Edith had her daughters, Jenny O'Hara and Jill O'Hara, of course, were, you know, Broadway actresses. And so they were around and we were just meeting fantastic people. But I began to really be interested in, you know, in writing plays and this off-Broadway scene and kind of doing unusual pieces. And was very inspired by living there at that time. And I lived there for a couple of years until I then moved out and kind of left mom and moved on my own. So, but it was wonderful. I really enjoyed those days.
That really sounds fascinating. Like I said to you pre the show, we were talking, the audience should know, before we go on air, the guest host always comes a little bit early so that we can make sure that the sound and connections are really well. And we were talking, and I said, you know, I'm going to find out more about you tonight than I've known, because I know you in different phases of your life, but then there's this gap. So that's a part of it that I didn't know. How did you get to the Larry Gallagher part of it? And Larry Gallagher, I should tell to people, was my manager early on in my career, really wonderful man who I stayed with for a little while, and then we separated before he passed away. How did that happen?
A mutual friend of ours, Gary Cannata.
Yes, Gary Cannata.
And you know Gary.
From Chicago. Dear God bless Gary Cannata. Yes.
Bless him. He was a fantastic person. And he had heard that Larry was looking somehow he had heard that Larry was looking for an assistant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how, I'm not sure what that connection is now, but so
it might have been me. It might have been me.
Yes, that's who. Of course,
I think it was me. I think it was me.
Right,
because Gary and I had worked together. Yes, Gary and I worked together, and of course, Gary. Once you know Gary, you always knew Gary. Yes.
So I went over there because you got me the interview, and I started working for Larry, and Larry was such a creative and interesting person. And he said to me, like the second day I was there, he said, because he was booking different nightclubs. He was booking Freddy's,
mm-hmm.
which is on the east side, and then he was booking Sweetwater's. But he said to me, so I want you to take this contract over to Broadway, I think it was the 42nd Street. I forget what theater it was in, but he said, and have Tammy Grimes sign it. So I was like, you mean like the Tammy Grimes, the Broadway star? He said, yeah, that's who. So, and he said, don't leave until you get it signed. So, you know, there I go over to the theater and, you know, get inside. And of course, you know, I met her, and, you know, it was in my first Broadway theater at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fascinating. So, you know, he kind of then opened up a whole another world to me. So I should say backstage at a Broadway theater. But so, you know, he and I began to talk and you, and then he said to me, you know, would you be interested in writing a musical? Have you ever done that? And I said, you know, I never have, but I love musicals. And he said, well, you know, I've been thinking about doing this project about Ethel Waters, who I really did not know at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we began to work on it as we were booking different nightclubs. And it was fascinating because of that, you know, my eyes were open to, you know, a whole nother era of entertainment that I had no idea that even existed, that was so important, that, you know, like where Ethel performed at the Cotton Club.
You know, I think what Larry did also was he brought into both of our lives the whole concept of creating projects, of creating vehicle,
yes,
from the very beginning. And because he said to me, he said, after Yubi, he said, you need to have something else to go to and you know, something that will focus on your talents. And he thought about Ethel. And then, of course, I started really doing the research and finding the similarities and the differences between us. But that's when you came in and, you know, and he's, I think I found a writer who's going to write a script called String Bean. And, that whole process started happening. Of course, you know, I mean, then he would have me, I got so busy, he was booking me different places that I missed my own reading with String Bean because I was out in Los Angeles working for Wayne Newton, you know. So some wonderful actors, you know, came in and read it for, you know, for you all, but, and it still hasn't been done yet. I mean, you know,
no,
we still
it has
done
not
it
been
yet.
Produced.
No, no. It but has, that's
and there, there have been, yeah, and there have been other Ethel Waters projects, but I always felt like this project really, really looked at who she was as that person, it, rather than by, it was biographical, but we really looked at why she did what she did and why she made the choices that she made and who she, and the effects of the time that she lived in.
Uh-huh.
And, uh-huh. And I would, of course, would love to do that, but you know, everybody got so busy. And I think that you started doing television and,
yeah,
you know, many,
yeah,
many things happened. You
yeah
know, life kind of happened, but you
yeah
know, I would,
yeah,
I loved that project though.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I remember. I still have scripts of it right here. And everyone, you never know. I mean, Larry and I are back together again, so you never know. You might see a String Bean in the future. But oh my gosh, talk about having to get in shape for doing 8 shows a week. But
oh, you would have no problem.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Thank you so very much. Now everyone heard that. Now watch when he wants to throw me
yes
out of this place, you know. But you know,
no.
The,
listen,
the
you would have no problem. You would sleep. You would sleep until 3. you'd get up. I could see you'd have a cup of tea, pet the dogs, get, you know, give Carly a big hug, and then you'd go relax.
Go to the theater. Get ready to go to
the
theater. It's part of the life that we have. Well, you know, you get used to. But
it
yes, it is. It is. And you know, as I examine and I'm gonna take it off of me and put it back on you in a second. But as I examine women like Ethel Waters and Josephine Baker, that was their life. It really is what we do. And I sit and
yes
stand on the shoulders of these women because they did all of those things. That I'm sitting here doing this right now because Ethel Waters and Josephine and all those women who, you know, really struggled and had a hard time, the Sarah Vaughns of the world, you know, they were out there really working hard. And I thank them. And I thank them very much
yes
because, you know, I have a wonderful life because of them. Now, I want to get off of me because this is about you because we haven't gotten to now we haven't gotten to what inspired you to start working into the Tony and Tina's Wedding. And how many years past String Bean was that? Because that was a little bit past String Bean. How many years was that, do you think?
The first time we did Tony and Tina's Wedding was, I believe, 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm
it had been, it was not my idea. The idea came from a very wonderful friend of mine. Her name is Nancy Casero. And she had been to 4 weddings in 1 weekend, and then she said, I want to do this play. And the first production of that play, which was at the VFW Hall down on 14th Street, you know, I did the catering for it, and it didn't have a director.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to it, and I saw it, and it was crazy because nobody had really done that kind of a play, which was, you know, it was interactive. You know, as the audience came in, they just became part of the play. Juan, who's my partner of 40 years, his father said one time that when he went to see Tony and Tina's Wedding, that it was like standing inside of a movie. because it really was like, you know, there's no separation between the audience and the actors. The actors just go up and talk to the audience.
It's very interactive. Yeah, exactly. You feel like you were attending a wedding. And, you know, that's the kind of feel that you get, you all created there. So what you're saying to me is you saw it in one form, but actually you molded it into something that was quite successful, because it's still being done today. Thank you.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. Didn't you just do a company in Hawaii?
We did a company in Hawaii a couple of years ago, and then it was at Bally's Hotel. The last major production that we did was at Bally's Hotel in about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was Buca de Beppa is a famous restaurant, and Robert Earl, who owned that restaurant and who owned Planet Hollywood and I forget what else he owns, but, you know, he's one of these people that, you know, is, you know, he's an extraordinary entrepreneur, but he wanted to do the show there. And so we had been at the Rio for many years, but then we decided to go ahead and move over there, and we did a revamped version of it. And it ran for a couple of years. It's been a very exciting journey, because we really, again, you know, and I don't think that I think that this is true for most artists, but a lot of times we have no idea what we're doing. We're just creating.
Yes.
And exactly. Especially at this time in the 80s, you know, things weren't that expensive. You know, you could, for $500, you could do 2 weeks of a run of a play.
Yes.
And we, so, you know, we kind of, we gathered everything that we had together, all of our finances and everything. And I think Nancy's father gave some money. And then, you know, we decided that we would do some performances of this. But Stephen Holden, the New York Times critic, had become a fan of the group that put this together called Artificial Intelligence. So some people had asked us to do the show for their wedding, a couple weeks before, it was their engagement party. So we did it for them, and Stephen came, and Stephen said, if you do this show, he said he really enjoyed it. He said, if you do this show, he said, I'll give you the critic's choice. I'll give you a review. He said, but you have to be in a run. I can't give you a review if you don't do a run.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we found this little place called Carmelita's. It was down on 14th Street, and it was a Cuban wedding hall up on the second floor. And she spoke no English. I spoke no Spanish. So I had to take Juan down there, who's Cuban, all the time to translate for
my dear Juan.
And we kept saying to her that we were going to do a wedding, but we want to do the wedding two times every weekend. So she couldn't get it, because she would say to Juan, well, who's getting married? So, well, the same people are getting married every day, because it's a play. It's an opera. So anyway, so, you know, we did it. We put it together, and we, after several, you know, we had workshopped it. We put it together, and we did it there for 8 performances. Stephen gave us a lovely review, and then the show was supposed to run 8 performances, but it ran for 25 years. And it was the kind of piece that, you know, initially everybody who was a theater goer really supported it, because it was unique and it was different and they had never seen anything like it. People Magazine came, and I don't know, whoever the reviewer was, you know, I don't know, you know, we did something wild with him. I forget if. But he couldn't even adjust to the fact that he was at a play. He kept thinking that he was somewhere real. So he gave us a lovely review, but you know, the thing is that we didn't feel that we were finished working on that play. So we moved from there. We moved over to near Sheridan Square. We found a space up above a restaurant there, and called Gus's Place. And so we moved there, turned it into a wedding hall, and And then we kept working on the play and just working on the play. And then, the play got so much attention because it was unique and it was just at the right time. And but we just, we still did notes every day and rewrote every day. And I don't know. And, Samuel French then came to us and said, well, we'd like to publish this. And we said, well, I mean, there isn't a script. That original company that had never left that was doing it. So then we had to sit down really and figure out how to put that into a script so that it could be done.
The spontaneity.
And of course that.
Yeah.
That brought in a whole new group of people, and it's done a lot in colleges and high schools because it has a large audience, and it's done a lot for fundraisers. So the people go out somewhere. I think that you did some of those fundraisers with it.
Yeah, some of your groups,
didn't you, Lenny?
Yes, we did. And let me tell you, what happened here was two actors here in Pennsylvania did the fundraiser that we did at ArtsQuest. And what happened, I hear, is that they fell in love in the play. They fell in love in real life and have come back and have opened a business and have their own business in Bethlehem because of Tony and Tegan's wedding.
Is that a brewery that they have?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I've met them. Yeah, they're lovely. They're lovely because I have, they came much later than when I was doing the show. But, they're really lovely.
I mean, but
there
are stories like that all the time. You all have reunions, and I went to one. I mean, the relationships that you all have go back decades, and people have children now, and their children have, talk about what their parents did in the show, and some of the original people are a little bit more mature now. I'll just put it like that. And so they talk to the younger people who are doing the show. It's fascinating. It's a wonderful whole legacy created now. And given that, because I do want to tie this in, and believe me, I'm going to say this: we only have about 25 minutes left because that's how it goes.
Okay.
But I want to tie this into what you do now, the other business that you do now, and how that artistically has helped it. But I want to say this, because one of the things I want to talk about is theater today, is do you think that you could bring Tony and Tina's Wedding back to New York? And since it's so interactive, and the young people would understand, because our own society is now an interactive society. Look at all the games and everything. Or do you think that it could be one of those games that, they make that's interactive? What do you think about something like that?
Yeah, we've met with many people about doing an interactive game about it. It still is intriguing to people. There have been a couple of performances this year. In fact, you were talking about the close-knit families and different things, and I know that in this, it's not exactly the best play for the time that we're in, because it is interactive and you dance with people, and there's no social distancing in this play.
But could it be a game? Could it be a game? Could it be a game that people play in unison all around the world? Could it be a game or something? Listen to me, trying to sell you on an idea. I don't know what I'm talking about. But it could be. I think it's such a wonderful idea.
Yeah, we did it this year as a fundraiser for a group in Hilo on Zoom.
Yeah.
And we were able to make it interactive in that we could, the audience, because they're on Zoom and they have a camera in front of them, we could see them, and we could see them when they were dancing, they could ask questions.
To bring into the whole level of diversity, you have done it. It was initially an Italian family, but you've done it with other ethnic groups. You've done it in the Caribbean. Yes. With ethnic groups.
Yeah. We did it in Bermuda. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did it in Bermuda, and one family was Bermudian English, and the other was Black Bermudian, and it was, and of course, I don't know if you've been to Bermuda, but race is just, I have never felt that race was really an issue there when I worked there. People just, I was casting and I would say, okay, well, you stand over there and you stand over there. And at one point somebody said, well, you know, you can say, you know, we don't want all the black actors come over here and all the white actors. We're not like America. We're not fussy about those kind of words.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we also did it in Puerto Rico, and we did it with in English, we did it bilingually, and we did it also in Spanish. We would do three different performances. So yeah, we've had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Now, before I get away from this part of the theater, you mentioned Edith O'Hara, but you did, and when I was looking at some of the materials, she was saying that she was doing, this was a couple of years ago, she was doing an Israel Horowitz play, Live, I think it is, or Live.
It was called Line.
Line. Did you get a chance to work with him at any point in time?
Yeah. Yes. So when we came back from California, we wanted to, you know, recast the play and redo the play. And Israel Horovitz lived very close by. So he would come over and come. I was directing it then. And I didn't direct it when it originally opened, but I was directing it while I was there, because when we were in the theater, we all did everything there. And he came over and he worked with us, and then I would go over and talk with him, and we would change a few things here and there. But he was very attentive to his work. And and that play has, you know, the theater is still open now, but that play ran forever, and it was a wonderful piece. Just a wonderful piece. And he was part of that whole group of people that opened my mind to other things, which is kind of where, you know, we finally got to Tony and Tina's Wedding, which was a very unique piece of theater. And very grateful for meeting all of those fantastic people and for Edith. And
now moving toward where you are now, you not only do this still, but you have an additional business, which I still don't get all of it. You know, I don't get all of it. But talk to me a little bit about that and how the arts has influenced that business with you and your partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so I was directing a production of Tony and Tina's Wedding in Hawaii, and then a gentleman at a diamond resort, and a gentleman named Howard Klubeck, who was the head of all of F&B and activities for all of their 130 resorts, and he across around the world. And so he would come in and he'd watch the rehearsals. And Howard loves entertainment. He's just an incredible person. And so we did the show there, and the show ran its production there. I think it was about 6 or 8 weeks in this ballroom in Maui. And then a couple of months later, Howard called and said, you know, he called my partner, Jeff Gitlin, who had produced that production of Tony and Gina's Wedding. And he said, would you like to work with us at Diamond Resorts? We have activity departments at our timeshares. So I didn't really know what an activity department was, and I didn't know what a timeshare was, and then he said, but you got to go to Branson, Missouri, and I didn't know what Branson was.
No.
So I got in a plane. I was in Hawaii. I got in a plane and went over to Branson. And first of all, I fell in love with Branson because it just had so many amazing shows there, and we opened our first activity department in their resort. So we do all of the arts and crafts activities, and we schedule all of the people that come in who you know would do the pool parties, and you know I really enjoyed it because to me, so every couple of hours there's a new activity or a new craft being done, but we really sculpted how those were being done. And you know, and having been in the theater and having been in interactive theater, I was able to really help
exactly
the people who I was working with, how to reach out to people and how to have hospitality. Mm-hmm. Because, I think being in the theater in some ways is the ultimate hospitality.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that's really my full circle in that, you know, even though you're still doing the arts as we know it, as I know it as a performer, though you are in another business, but your relationship with the arts and your experience with the arts has influenced how you work in that business. And I mean, it's a business. It's not our arts business. It's a business. And that's one of the things.
It's a business.
Yes. That's one of the things that, you know, I really want people to understand. They wouldn't think that you had done all that you had done if they just met you in a meeting. You know, it's just the meeting you in a meeting. The influence of the arts has so much to do with that. But I I'm so excited that you brought that in. And also I want to talk about the association that we have that we're working on. I want to bring to our attention that have about 15 more minutes left. So everyone who's listening, thank you very much for calling in. The board is full. If you're starting to have any questions, this is the time to press one. Now we've had a little problem with that. Hopefully if you're pressing one and you know, you're not getting through to that, but you know, either Larry or myself, give us a text and then tell me what number it is. And then, you know, we'll push you through. If not, I can't help you at this point in time, but somehow on Facebook or something, let me know that you're having problems coming through asking questions. Okay, so I just want to get that through because last week we had people who told me during the week that they were trying to ask the ladies questions and it just didn't work for them. Now, let's talk about where we are and why we talk almost a lot now.
It's another theatrical
program that you've started. Mm-hmm. Talk about virtual art for a minute.
Yeah. So, and thank you for bringing this up because we're having such a unique experience with this. This is a digital online theater company. And all of our productions that we do are live. We have not even streamed any yet, but we're doing productions that are live on the online. So we're using Zoom, which is wonderful. And Zoom has become a whole education. A few months into COVID, I think in April of last year, I was talking to friends and I could hear that they didn't know, they were in their apartments, they wanted to be creative, they wanted to do the theater, but they knew that they couldn't in the old way, the regular way. And so I said, let's take Tony and Tina's Wedding and let's see if we can do a Zoom version of it. So I gathered this group of people together and, you know, we just began that April. We finally did a run through in August of it, but we rewrote it. We worked on it. You know, we talked about how you perform on Zoom and how it's different than on the stage.
Yes.
And then, you know, it began to dawn on us that we had 15 actors in 15 locations, so that's 15 sets with their own lighting, so 15 sets of lighting, 15 sets of sound, 15 different places all coming together on that Zoom screen to create a live piece of theater.
Yes.
And we were learning every day that we were working together. And, you know, the one thing that we were very dedicated to at that point was listening to one another, because this is a group of people I had worked with for a long time. And we would really listen to each other about what we felt was going on. And people were so receptive. And I think that what it really did was, it gave people hope at that time that there could be there could be some kind of online theater. And so, you know, as you know, then I called you and I said, you know, I think we have something here. And I asked you to be on the board, which you graciously accepted. And
my pleasure.
Yes, of course. And, you know, so what we've begun to do is try to put together, we've done it, you know, putting together a season now of, mm-hmm. of plays that we're going to do. And, you know, we're doing pieces, and you've hosted one of these for Juneteenth, pieces about diversity, where we're bringing people together. That show had a theater group from Orlando and another theater group from Las Vegas together on the same show.
Exactly.
That
a great
learning from one another.
A great conversation about diversity, and found out that they were belonging to similar groups and didn't know it, you know, around each other.
Yeah.
So it's also become a way of joining people together, interactive, like I would say relationships, where people find out that they have more in common than not. Given the fact that we are moving forward, we have a play festival coming up. We have a Good Talk, which is a conversational piece like this that we're doing with the wonderful Judith Rizzo, who is, I believe, a personality that people should and will see more of. This is a woman who's dedicated her life in the arts, and also what she's done is provided an opportunity for people who are in transition, transgender, she provides a service for them for fashion and guidance. And we're going to highlight her in one of the Good Talk programs. So there's a lot that's going on virtually that we're a part of. What I want to know in these last 10 minutes or so is, now that we are in this leg of opening back up in the theater, where does live presentation fit in this? Is it going to, in your opinion, and then we all have our own opinions, you know, Broadway League is trying so very, very hard to open it up, because it is a source of income for many, many people and for the city itself. How do we marry these things? Is a thought that I have. How do we marry these things so that we have both going on? Because I believe you never have progress and then throw it away. I think this is progression that adds on to the live performance that we have to find a way to morph into one another. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes, I believe that live online theater, you know, is live theater. So, you know, it is related to going to the live theater. I was just in New York and I went to see Passover, which was a wonderful show, and loved it, and, you know, and it had, you know, and wore my mask and did everything that I was supposed to, so I could sit there and see it. But one of the things I think that's important about online theater is that it really can it has a huge reach. So
yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
We can go and do theater online in places where people can't get to the theater or aren't going to get to the theater. They don't have the means to get to the theater, but they can see a live theater production. It's because it's not television. It's not film. It's live online theater. It's a whole new genre.
I try to tell people, you know, there are a lot of people who are very upset about Zoom because they say, well, it's not theater. I said, of course it's not theater. It's not. It's not theater.
Oh, it isn't.
It's Zoom. Let's you know, you call something what it is. It should not be trying to be theater. Theater in live person theater is what it is, and it's wonderful, and it's a separate experience. But also the times require for us to have another kind of experience. So one should not negate the other. One should complement.
No, I think they can support each other.
Yes.
And
yes.
Very much so, because I think that we piqued like with Turnington's Wedding, you know, we piqued the interest of a lot of people who didn't typically go to the theater.
Yes.
Because they, when you said the wedding was like a party, yeah. they would come to that.
Exactly.
And then from there, they would go to the theater.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think, you know, we're going to do, so Virtual Arts is going to do a production of a piece called Leo and Lily's Luau. And we're doing that in December. And that production will have all kinds of music, hula. It has, you know, the cast will be from every time zone in America,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
all performing on that screen at the same time, in unison. So, you know, we don't really, it's a unique form of theater. So, you know, in fact, Leo and Lily, who, you know, are together, even though they're on separate screens, she's actually living in Maui and he's living in Brooklyn. But, you know, you would think as you watch this on screen that they're together.
It was,
so,
yeah,
you know,
and, you know, and it's, it was, I remember the production that you did earlier with them. You learned so much about the different cultures and how they come together in time, in that very personal time, real time, in real time.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulties that people
yeah.
have in real time. You know, it's not like, it's a different entity as it's how it's presented. And I will say to everyone, I said, you know, one does not negate the other. It's just a different art form. It's a different art form. And it's an advantage. And one then has more choices. You know, we don't want the arts to be an elitist situation where people don't feel comfortable going to it. And I think
right.
Tony's wedding open that up, and this kind of thing opens it up more, where people will enjoy things that they would normally not go to see because of the ceremony and the procedure that it does happen when you go to the theater. Even though it's far more relaxed than it was when I thought about going to the theater when I was younger, it's far more relaxed now. But there is still a protocol. There are still people who follow that protocol, and some people are uncomfortable with that protocol, and then they can enjoy the art form in a more casual and comfortable atmosphere. And we are promoting the art, not just an art form.
Right.
We're promoting the arts. It's to get the arts out. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
just an art.
And last year, Virtual Arts employed about 60 actors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody, you know, and everybody, you know, received money for their performance, because I really do not believe that actors should perform without being paid, because
yes.
it's happened to them. It happens too much to them. And
yes.
So, you know, and, you know, technicians and excuse me, costume people, a lot of people have worked on these productions this year, and well, actually a year from now, we should probably, with all of the actors who will be in our new play festival, which is going to be at the end of February, we're presenting 10 new plays, one act,
one
full-length play.
Is yours, one of which is going to be one of your plays.
Yes, that you're going to direct.
Yes.
And, yeah, that's
yes.
called Captivity. So, and that's
yes.
about, and most of these plays that are being presented reflect the time.
I think so.
But
yeah.
yeah, but they will have actors in them who are all on Zoom. So they're going to be from all different parts of the country, bringing in all these different audiences. And in that production alone, we'll have nearly 50 actors that will perform in those 10 plays.
Exactly.
So, you know, so we are, you know, we're promoting the arts. We're promoting creativity. We are promoting thinking outside the box.
Yeah, and I
because
think that actors can do both. They can do the in-person and then they can do the virtual. No one is saying that you have to be married to either one. It's just let us
right.
expand ourselves and let's promote and support all of it at the same time. And,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what's important. But always keeping the audience's safety in mind, and that should be one of the first things that we talk about. Now, people,
yes.
we're down to the last 5 minutes. If anyone has anything that they want to say, I think that they've been really busy listening to us, which is great. But I just want to make sure that if they had anything else to say, we're down. I told you it goes fast. When you start really talking about what it is that you are focusing on and what you're living, the time goes. It really does here, and I enjoy it so much. I can't tell you, Larry, what this means to have you on here to rekindle a relationship that started at the beginning of or the beginning part of my career, and to have it now, and also to rekindle maybe a play that we'll do together, and maybe projects that we'll do together. It's wonderful for me. Thank you very much, and I understand the blessing of it.
Lenny.
Oh, you're welcome. That we are going to do the video part of this. I always do the video part with everyone if people are comfortable. There are a couple of guests who are not as comfortable on Zoom, and they may not, coming up, they may not do this video part. But Larry is comfortable. So.
Yes, I showered. I shaved.
And it will be on the Godly Entertainment page on Facebook, and as well, it's archived on Facebook on Lenny Godfrey channel. And we are really, I'm so very, very happy to have all of those things archived so these conversations can be listened to at any point in time. They can be viewed at any point in time, and people can see the kind of history that we have. So we've been very, very lucky to have that.
Yes, and I have loved listening to your program. Don't in-depth conversations from your guests that we hear on this. And it creates these magnificent visions in my mind because I've loved the theater for so long. So, here we are talking to, some of these great people of the theater, and it's Salvo and, Ken Page and, tremendous people, and hearing them describe what they went through to get to where they are, has been wonderful to listen to. So thank you for creating this, Lenny.
Well, you're welcome, and hearing Larry Pellegrini talk about it. Well, we're down now to almost a minute and everything. So, everyone, I want to thank you all for listening. We're going to move on to the video portion of this. We're going to take a little time and breathe, and then we'll have that up, and it'll be up later on today. Those of you who are curious as to see Larry and I in person and hear a little bit more of what our lives were like and what's going to be like and what it is now. So thank you very much for listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Thank you, Larry, for coming on. And I'll see
My
you
pleasure.
A little bit, yes, on video as I see you on the radio. Thank you, everyone. See you on the radio next week. We'll just have a wonderful time, and it will be visual artist Robin J. Miller. She's wonderful. I've not done a visual artist, so we're going to talk about the art form that she's done, and then we'll see her and see her artwork. So see you next week. Thank you now. Lenny Godfrey.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I